This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, August 24th, 2018. I'm Caleb Brown. Establishing a fruitful dialogue with our political and ideological opponents means understanding their core concerns. In his new film about Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky, Matt Kibbe takes viewers off the grid to see what drives a man to live the way he does. In doing so, he hopes to spark a more productive conversation. I spoke with Kibbe in June about the film and about making ideological disagreements more productive. You've made a film about 4th District U.S. Representative Thomas Massie. I believe he was elected in 2012 for the first time.
Yes.
He represents Northern Kentucky. He is a Republican, I suppose. And I've had him on the Cato Daily Podcast a couple of times. And I remember asking him before we started recording, I said, "You're kind of a prepper, right?" And he backed up a little bit and he said, no. I was a prepper before being a prepper was cool. And of course, that means like preparing for some unforeseen large scale negative event.
The zombie apocalypse.
whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But he is, you know, something of a Renaissance man. So what were you trying to get at in making this short film about him?
It's funny you say that because his home reminds me a little bit of visiting Monticello. And he's an MIT graduate. He's an insanely smart engineer who created his own virtual reality company and sold it, I think, before he was probably 26 years old. And he moved back to Kentucky to live off the grid. And he is in a lot of ways, the progressive environmentalist personified. He lives a carbon neutral life. He generates most of his energy from solar panels on the roof of his house. He created his own water source and recycles water. He raises his own cattle and he's a locavore. He grows his own food, and he does this because he believes in self-sustainable life. And he doesn't want to be dependent on the government for specifically electricity, because he says that that cord, that umbilical cord that connects you to the grid, is one way the government might control you. But we wanted to talk to him and get him to tell his story, because I think the seeming contradiction of a Tea Party Republican, a conservative, a libertarian, however you want to label him, is doing all the things that environmentalists wish that people would do, but he's doing it because he wants to be independent. And he's demonstrating in practice the economy that comes with environmentalism, the conservation aspects of economy, and pointing out in various aspects of the film how it is that big corporate beef, for instance, and the USDA prevents local producers from selling to their neighbors. And so that localism aspect, the self-sustainable aspect, I mean, he sounds like a progressive, but he's a conservative. And I love that confusion. I love that people walk away from this saying, "I'm not sure who that guy is."
Right. And, you know, when you have to boil somebody down to a collection of very specific positions on specific hot button issues that some Americans care intensely about, that sort of obscures a lot of the nuance and sort of robs us of the opportunity to understand people as whole human beings.
Yeah, and it's a demonstration of how vapid our tribal politics has gotten today, and on the far left and on the far right, you have these two sort of flavors of identitarianism, and they hate each other, and they spend all their time attacking the other team. But if you put aside those artificial teams for a second, and you go visit someone in Eastern Kentucky who is living the values of, in a lot of ways, of a Bernie Sanders progressive, but he's also living the values in a lot of ways of a Trump supporting conservative. It shows you that there, in real America, meaning outside of politics, that there's a lot of common values that you could find And maybe we could say they're in the middle if we're accepting this left-right thing, but that was sort of the point. Like there's something here that's fundamentally American, fundamentally libertarian.
So, you know, a broader part of the goal here, I sense from the film, is to scramble some circuits when it comes to what we understand about ideologies and the practical impact of our behavior in the world and understanding the values that we share. So, I think that's part of a larger project of yours, right?
Yeah. I mean, that in some ways sums up everything that Free the People is trying to work on. And we say that our primary target audience, all of our videos, all of our products are targeting this community that I call the Liberty Curious. And they're people that would never use the L word, libertarian, because they may not even know that such an option exists. And to the extent they know it exists, they've heard all of the rational economic arguments and you know the non-aggression principle and all this tribal language that we use in our little community, but that misses the broader community that I think is very interested in these ideas, and the way you reach them I think is stories, and particularly if it's a personal story, if it's someone that you can relate to. And not only when that person is fighting under the boot of big government, maybe it's a medical cannabis activist, and we've done some work on that. But in Massey's example, he's just a guy trying to live the good life the way he knows it in his part of Kentucky. And I think a lot of people can relate to that quest of being independent enough to raise your kids and to live your life the way you want to live it. And to me, that's not a liberal or a conservative thing. That's a human thing.
Yeah, it's like kill your television.
Yeah,
you know, turn on, tune in, drop out, and being able to do that to associate with other parts of society on your terms.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a dream. That's a dream that I think people who do not know what the word libertarian means would definitely share.
Yeah. And I think, you know, technology, I happen to be a romantic about technology. We, you know, we complain about the silos and the clickbait and all the things that have degraded our public conversation. But I think we're in the midst of a paradigm shift where, you know, just a few years ago, top-down institutions in media and politics, in corporations and government, we were kind of told from a very slim set of options how it was going to be. And there was someone smart that was sort of dictating from the top down. As technology has become ubiquitous, it radically democratizes everything, and it disintermediates all of these old power structures. And we've broken from two tribes. Let's simplify it and say it used to be, you know, left versus right, to this multiplicity of tribes. We're all sort of, you know, there's the Trump tribe and the establishment Republicans and the Liberty Republicans. Same fights going on amongst Democrats. But I think it's halfway between where we were and where we're going, because the logical endpoint for radical democratization is this beautiful world where young people live in, where they curate everything. They choose everything. They choose their associations. They curate communities. And of course, they download the music they want to download and everything. They curate their own knowledge when they choose what to watch on YouTube. And to me, that's a radically libertarian world. And the only way that people can tolerate each other in a world where there's so many tribes, there's not dozens of tribes, there's millions of tribes, there may be a uniqueness of each of us. That has to be the world where we say people should live their own lives as long as they don't hurt people or take their stuff.
Right. That is the basic, the kibbeism.
Yes.
If there is one, that's it.
The standard translation of Adam Smith's theory of moral sentiments in a tweet.
Right. So, where are the biggest failures? This is an ongoing conversation, really, among libertarians. What I like to joke is that the best way to convince someone to your way of thinking is to loudly call them a statist as often as possible while pointing your finger. And of course, that's a joke. But but you know, where do we fall down? Where do people fall down in trying to communicate the idea of liberty as a beautiful and empowering thing?
I think we're not embracing this radical change, this paradigm shift aggressively enough. And that requires a lot of experimentation. It requires an understanding that even our old top-down institutions, where we used to stand at the lectern and tell people how economics worked and explain in very vivid detail how you would reform the education system, I think we need to be open to the wisdom of crowds. And technology allows us to really tap into that and to find ways that we can communicate with different types of people that have never used the kind of tribal language that we've used in our little tribe. And I realized this about a year and a half ago. I was meeting with a bunch of progressives, and it was a closed-door meeting off the record, and I had been invited in to participate in what was really a strategy meeting that they were having. And by the end of the meeting, I stood up and very respectfully said, with all due respect, I really don't understand what you're saying. They're speaking perfect English, but they had a specialized language that they used that meant nothing to me. And then I came back to my tribe and we did the same damn thing. And I realized it was a very humbling experience. If we want to communicate to people that haven't read all the books we've read, we better be comfortable with crowdsourcing a common language that's really more values-based than sort of rational economic argumentation.
Right. I've heard from various people that, well, I just need to read this book, then I'll understand. And then I thought, oh, gosh, give me a break. And then I realized, oh, my God, I've done that to people. It's like, oh, you haven't read this book? My goodness. Well, you just can't possibly even engage on this stuff. It's walling off your community and saying, well, you're not worthy because you haven't done enough to belong to my community.
Yeah. And you know, a practical example of that is, you know, if your strategy is handing out copies of Human Action to young people, you're going to have a pretty high rate of failure. Particularly given that, you know, they consume almost everything they do on social media. And, you know, the caricature of that is you only have their attention for 90 seconds. And we certainly do a lot of very short form videos where the first 10 seconds are essential for whether or not you're going to capture their attention for that. But there's a counter revolution that's happening primarily on YouTube where young people are creating their own curriculums. Curating various documentaries and long form podcasts like Dave Rubin and others that are very intense and civil conversations amongst smart people who sometimes use big words. So this idea that you can't have a serious conversation with young people is ridiculous. And again, it's all about experimentation. And it may be about storytelling. It may be about your authenticity and your willingness to actually hear what your opponent is saying. All of these things, I think, matter.
And being aware of your own biases.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge for absolutely everybody. We're here talking at FeeCon, and I was talking with Magat Wade, who is a really fascinating, interesting serial entrepreneur of a lady. And, you know, I think we agree that among the contributions, broadly speaking, of the left to getting to a better understanding, making some people aware of their biases is a really important thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should also be aware of their own biases, yeah. but the contribution is, yes, Caleb Brown has biases and he needs to think about that more seriously. That's undoubtedly true.
Yeah. And I think that responsibility, and this would sound like a very libertarian thing to say, that the responsibility for understanding that starts with you when you're trying to listen to someone who's supposedly on the other side of the political spectrum. And we've done this series at Free the People called Speaking with the Enemy, where, well, I'll find a progressive that's willing to take a chance by having a conversation with this crazy Tea Party guy called Matt Kibbe, and to see if there isn't, in fact, some common ground. And you know, Speaking with the Enemy is kind of a clickbaity title, but the joke is that, no, we're not going to yell at each other. We're actually going to listen, and we're going to engage, and we're going to disagree, but we're going to do it in a way that respects the other person as authentic in their beliefs.
Matt Kibbe is president of Free the People. We spoke in June. You can subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes, Google Podcasts, and when you think about it, say, Alexa, play the Cato Daily Podcast. And you can follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.